Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Up on this episode of White Line Question Time.
It was my first bit of telly, so the terminology that they were using on set, when they shout turn around, which means, you know, we're about to go for a take, I was turning round. I remember auditioning once, and it was a set scene. On the opening scene, my character was reaching an orgasm, and Peter was like, I literally can't stop crying with laughter. This is oh, my dad, I've never seen my dad cry before, and I could see him filling up when I told him I'd got the Corey gig. Who have watched it since day one? I think like second or third day, I said, you know, who's your ideal woman? Who's your free pass sort of thing? And I was really blonde at the time. He's like, yeah, I like brunettes, not really into boobs, bit of a leg man. And I'm like, oh, great. I've got legs like a prop forward and massive boobs. This is going nowhere. And I told my dad, he was like, no, Kath. If Mr. Lloyd Webber wants you, he can get on a train and he can come to you this time. That's not fair. And I was like, Graham, I don't think it works like that, mate.
And welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest today is an actress best known for her seven-year stretch on the cobbles of Coronation Street as Eva Price, not to mention her spin on the Strictly dance floor. Born in Salford in 1983, she fell in love with acting as a child, performing with various theatre groups before going on to the Birmingham School of Acting, and graduated in 2005, having already been signed by an agent who came to see her showcase during her studies. She made ends meet working and singing in the working men's clubs of the North and performing before big games at Manchester United before she landed her first role in Channel 4's drama No Angels, where she met her future Corey co-star Catherine Kelly. From there, parts in Shameless, Holby, Trolleyed, and Two Pints of Lager and a Packet of Crisps followed, and in 2010 she joined the cast of Emmerdale briefly for 3 months before switching to the cobblestone streets of Weatherfield until her Coronation Street departure in 2018. Since leaving the show, she's appeared in Scarborough alongside Jason Manford, The Good Ship Murder with Shane Ward, and in 2019 joined Strictly, making it to the sixth week with Johannes. She lives in Manchester with her husband Tom and their two young children, Alfie and Iris, and is about to head out on tour, putting her pipes to the test in the musical Bonnie and Clyde, which she's touring this month all the way through to the autumn. So let's dial her in, shall we? It's Catherine Tildesley.
What an intro.
You've been busy.
I have, yeah. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's so nice to see you. The last time we saw each other was under slightly more stressful circumstances. We were both appearing on The Weakest Link.
We were making fools of ourselves on television. It was joyous.
Do you know, I don't know about you, but I find those shows, I'm really fine until you get onto the studio floor, and then the competitive side of me is just overwhelming. And I go from being, oh, this is a bit of a laugh, to I must win. And yeah, it's ugly.
I do get like that, but the nerves as well. You know, when you're sat at home and you think you know everything, as soon as you're under pressure, it's like, oh my God. Like, I mean, I was coming out with some really embarrassing, answers. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but it's easy to know the answers when you're watching along at home. Never quite as easy when you stood there under the spotlight. But listen, Weakest Link to one side, you're about to put your pipes to the test and take yourself out on, is it your first musical?
It is, yeah.
How is that possible when you've been a singer for so long?
Do you know what? I trained in musical theatre and I assumed that I would predominantly work in musical theatre. And then when I graduated, I got really lucky with television and film. And it was consistent, you know, thank God, been very lucky, and I just didn't get the chance. And then over the years, we've had a couple of musicals come in, and I kept saying to Tom, because by this point I'd had Alfie, I was like, I've got to really fall in love with something, but you know, for me to leave the kids for that amount of time and indeed go on tour. And as soon as I heard Bonnie and Clyde, and the same for Tom, we were like, this is it. This is the one. The music is just, oh, it's divine. We both fell in love with it. And Tom is, you know, he holds everything together when I'm working away. And he listened to that first song from the score and he said, you've got to do this. You have to do it. It's a little bit of you. You've got to do it. So, yeah, we both fell in love with it straight away. I'm very lucky that my husband is this chilled.
Yeah, well, you know, you're a partnership. I'm sure with the shoe on the other foot, you'd be equally as supportive. But I get it. It's a lot to ask for somebody to keep the home fires burning while you're in and out, exhausted, 8 shows a week, putting yourself out there in a way that you know you can do it, but nobody's seen you do it yet. That must be a bit nerve-wracking.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm terrified, but more excited than I am terrified. And the rest of the cast, oh, I'm just fangirling over the rest of the cast because they're amazing.
Who else is in it with you?
Oh, God, Katie Tonkinson, who plays Bonnie, we stood outside the room. We did this promo day where we all got to kind of meet and we all had a little chirp and I stood outside the room listening to her sing and I was like, oh, my days. Same with Danny Hatchard. Alex, everybody in that cast is so strong, and of course that elevates you as a performer as well. It's I feel really lucky to be among such incredible talent.
I don't know why people don't know more about your singing. You sing predominantly, it's jazz, isn't it?
Yeah, so my granddad was a jazz singer. He was incredible. He sounded like Billy Eckstein, beautiful. And so I was heavily influenced by him. I always say that I was born in the wrong era because I love, you know, Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald, Doris Day. All the old school stuff is really my bag. And I've not, because I've been so busy with the acting side of things with film and television, you know, which I'm very grateful for, I've only managed to do bits of singing here and there. And it's been on my bucket list for a while now. I kept saying to Tom, I really, want to do a musical. I want to stretch my legs a bit and challenge myself. So it's come at the right time, and it feels like the right piece for me. So yeah, really excited.
And it's a long work. It's a long time on the road, isn't it? I mean, you're not just. It's not just a long run. It's a long run on the move.
It is. Well, I take a chunk out in the middle because I'm filming something that I can't talk about yet. So I have got a few weeks, a few months out in the middle. But yeah, I'm doing the majority of the tour, and it is. It's a lot. It's a long time away from home. But the kids and hubby will meet me in different cities.
Yeah.
And I'll come home a lot of the time. You know, some of the venues aren't too far away at all. So I'll step off stage Saturday night, drive home, wake up with the kids, and then move on again Monday morning. So we'll make it work.
Listen, I toured with my son when he was little, as you know, before he went to school.
Did you?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a juggle, but I wouldn't have changed it for the world. I mean, it's not for the faint-hearted, that's for sure. You have to kind of go, okay, routines. Yeah, I might have to chill out on that a bit. when you're moving around from place to place. But you always find a way. Where there's a will, there is a way. And I know that you have great will, because I've been reading up about you, and I've hopefully devised for you three thought-provoking questions that will help us to learn a little bit more about who you are and what makes you tick. So are you ready for your first question?
I think so.
I wanted to talk about life lessons and the places, the people, and the situations that have been important in terms of your own. So for question number one, I'm going to break that down. I'm going to start with the people who have taught you the most, the people that have helped to guide you, shape you, and steer you to where you are today.
Wow. Gosh. That's a great question. I think first and foremost, my parents, who have been beyond supportive. You know, my mum held down three jobs just to enable her to give me as much as she could when I was at drama school. And my dad worked all hours. They're real grafters. And although I'm not from a wealthy family by any means, we never wanted for anything. I think I got my work ethic from them, for sure. They didn't earn a lot of money, but you know, we were always provided for, and more importantly, we were always supported in whatever we wanted to do. My dad was my roadie when I was singing, doing the working men's clubs and United. I didn't learn to drive till quite later on. I think I was 28, and every Friday and Saturday night, Graham has given up his weekend to come and watch me. And I mean, I secretly think he was there for the 9 p.m. pasty and peas, but we'll let that go.
Pasty and peas.
Pasty and peas with the bingo.
How old were you at this point?
Oh, God. Would have been early 20s. Yeah. And my granddad, God bless him, he was my hero. And when I finished drama school, I was like, okay, I need to earn some money in between acting gigs. And he bought me my first PA system, and he was like, come on, you can do this. And that's kind of where I learned a lot of my craft in terms of playing to a live audience. And that saying, you know, I know Jason Manford said it before, if you can do the working men's clubs, you can do anywhere. And so that was, I learned a lot doing the circuits. So yeah, my parents and grandparents.
What was in your set on those early gigs? What tracks made up
it
your set list?
It would depend where I was. I would try and tailor it, but the first half would be a lot of the old school swing and jazz. There'd be a bit of Sinatra. Doris Day went down a storm. I'd have everyone stood up on the chairs doing Que Sera, Sera. Oh, it was a hit. And then the dance spot, as they would call it, would be quite a lot of Motown. So you'd have things like the Supremes, and then another favourite that everyone loved was Build Me Up Buttercup.
Yeah.
Valerie, that's always sure to get everybody up. So yeah, it was good fun. And again, I think it's one of those, sometimes I would double up. So in essence, I'd be singing for almost 4 hours in one night. But I was very careful. And again, it was great training. You know, when I was working 4 or 5 nights a week doing that amount of singing, you really became quite strong vocally.
You had that many gigs?
Oh, at one point. I mean, it was amazing. You didn't earn very much with the working men's clubs. But, you know, luckily, I kind of got spotted, if you will, and I started to do some more work at United and do things like the Players Awards, and I did a little bit of touring with them. And Sir Alex, bless him, was so lovely, and he was always very supportive. He loved swing and jazz. And so, yeah, as time went on, just before I got Corrie, I had some really cool gigs. We did the Checkered Flag Ball in Abu Dhabi, and, yeah, it's amazing. And then I got Corrie, and I kind of, in fact, when I got into Corrie, I don't think I sang for quite a while because it was so full on. Maybe 4 or 5 years, I didn't sing much at all. So, yeah, it's nice to...
So Alex Ferguson took a shine to you, and that put you at, well, you know, in front of a crowd that was way beyond any working man's club. You were playing in front of sold out, you know, stadiums.
It was great. And you know, and off the back of that, there were a lot of big businesses there. So you'd get corporate gigs. And so it kind of, it elevated me into a new arena, and it was brilliant. I had some amazing opportunities, and I got to play in some really cool places here and abroad. So it's always a part of my life that I'm grateful for. I'm really grateful for.
Well, you really souped up this club circuit, didn't you? Very quickly, you go from the working men's club circuit to, you know, playing in front of football crowds, and then off to Abu Dhabi doing a nice corporate. I mean, corporate's where the money is as well, isn't it? So suddenly you might have been able to put a bit of money aside.
Oh yeah, that was nice to have a bit of money in my pocket after drama school.
And, I bet.
I feel so lucky, and I got to work with some amazing people. I was often put on the stage just before Beverly Knight, because Beverly Knight would do some of the same corporates, a lot of work at United, and I was like, oh my god, thank god she's coming on after me. Can you imagine following that? But yeah, so I'd get to meet all kinds of people, and it was a really lovely time. It was really, really hard work. You know, I've always grafted, and I am a grafter. I love my job. It was a really cool time.
But a lot you must have learned on that circuit as well.
Oh, yeah, the material. I mean, I've got scripts and scripts upstairs. Watch this space.
When you went into working in television, one of your first big shows that you joined was No Angels with Catherine Kelly, and she really took you under her wing, didn't she?
Oh, she did. I'd never met her before. And I think all of my scenes were with Catherine, and we just hit it off straight away. And she was like, oh, you remind me of my sister, my younger sister, Grace. And it was my first bit of telly. So the terminology that they were using on set, you know, things like when they'd shout, turn around, which means, you know, we're about to go for a take. I was turning around. And Kate was like, no, babes, they don't want you to literally turn around. And then they'd say, Kath, move across, this shot's dirty. And I'd be like, dirty? Is it that kind of show? What are we talking about? They'd be like, no, it just means your shoulders. I felt like I learned so much from her. And she's always been one of my role models, really. I think she's an incredible actress, and I look up to her with everything she does. And then, again, took me under her wing when I was at Coronation Street. And even now, I can phone her up and, you know, ask her advice on something, and she gives the best advice. She is like the older sister that I never had, really. Yeah, she's
how lovely to find somebody so early on in your career that you can turn to.
Yeah. Oh, because, you know, this industry can be really dog eat dog.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you know. So she's a real good egg, and there's. You know, in the same breath, there's a lot of actors out there like that will want to take you under the wing and help you out. If, you know, I'm in that position now. I'm helping the younger ones. I'm like, don't do this. Make sure you get your per diems. Do that. Don't do that. You know, it's
don't
nice
turn around.
Don't turn around. Don't take your top off.
Very good advice. Who else has been a guiding light in your world?
So I think if we say my family as a collective, really, my parents, grandparents, and then I've had, there's been quite a few friends that have come and gone throughout my life. My best friend, Peter, we have the same childminder literally as babies, and we pretty much grew up together, and we went to the same high school, same college, and he's still my best friend today. And he has seen me at my worst, he's seen me at my best, he's supported me through everything. He used to drive over to Birmingham and see me all the time when I was at drama school, and oh, the amount of self-tapes that poor boy's had to do with me over the years.
It's hard work being an actor's friend, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I remember auditioning once, and it was a sex scene, and we couldn't do this self-tape because I was crying laughing. On the opening scene, my character was reaching an orgasm, and Peter was like, I literally can't stop crying with laughter. So he's seen it all. He's seen
all.
He
really has, hasn't he?
Peter, yeah, God bless him. He has been a constant throughout my life. And again, I call him brother because that's what he is to me. He's family. That saying, the friends are the family you can choose, for sure, is. And then I've got, I've got another friend, Liz Taylor. I don't know if you know Liz Taylor. She's a big events planner. She owns TLC. She did our wedding and does the most insane events. And she's become a really good friend of mine over the years. And she's an absolute powerhouse. You know, she has built this entertainment empire with her own two hands. And she's top of the game now. And I'm really inspired by women like her. And a lot of my female friends are like that. They're very strong, very successful women that have worked their way up from nothing. I really admire that, and it motivates me and it inspires me. And they're still really humble, genuine, lovely, lovely people that do a lot of work to help others. And they're the kind of people that I like to surround myself with.
And what about your kids? Because I think that as much as we are supposed to be their greatest teachers, I think they teach us so much. What have you learned as a mum?
To chill out. I'm a typical Virgo. Like you were saying earlier about, losing routine when you're on tour. Things like that scare me. Like already the production office are like, okay, we can see that you're the OCD one. Because I'm like, what's this? What time is this? But since I've had the kids, it has for sure made me relax a little bit more, because I'm like, you know what? There's nothing I can do. If I'm about to leave the house and I'm covered in last minute baby poo and I've got avocado in my hair, I'm not going anywhere. I just need to take a breather. There's nothing I can do about that situation. And also being in the moment more, I think, because I am a workaholic. I hold my hands up to that. And I love my job. I'm still very ambitious, but I think when I had Alfie, it was a real turning point for me to go, I don't need to check my phone every hour on the hour. I'm a big fan of Dr. Rangan Chatterjee, who wrote the four pillar plan, who says, start by just turning your phone off for 20 minutes a day. The week after, do it for an hour. The week after that, do it for 4 hours. And that's quite addictive, because I really love turning my phone off, and I know it's not always doable, but having children, that helped me to do that, because I thought, God, I don't want to lose a moment. I mean, it just goes so fast.
It really does, and honestly, you won't get those years back, and there will always be a phone.
Exactly.
We've just been away on holiday, actually, me and my son. And it was incredible. We were touring around in Thailand. Brilliant trip. But every night you'd go into a restaurant and families weren't talking. They were just all on their phones, sat at the table. And these are from all different parts of the world. It's the universal language of being hooked to your handset. And it was really quite shocking to see. We got to this beautiful island. called Rally Beach. And it is literally like, you know, it's cinematic. It's so beautiful. And you get off the boat and it's like you've landed in 25 social media shoots. There aren't people swimming in the ocean. They're swimming with their hands in the air, trying to keep their phone dry so they can go and take a picture of themselves. And I was just like, God, when did you forget to be present? It was really quite alarming. Mm. Just got out of hand so quickly. Mm. And I sound all, you know, kind of upright and pious and all of that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I took loads of photos while we were there, but
yeah,
I was there as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I was really glad that, I think, you know, we were the last generation really to grow up without phones.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good to that.
Thank God. Oh, so much good. And, you know, Tom and I will remind each other, because we're both busy and we both love our jobs, but we will pull each other up on it. You know, if we're with the kids, we will. And if we feel like we're on our phones a bit much, we will say to each other, come on, turn it off for an hour or whatever.
You can give your kids screen time. I think you almost need to start thinking about doing that for yourself. Because it's so easy just to suck you in. The scroll of doom. Mm. You know, you're just scrolling through. Yeah. You know, why am I watching reels of people I've never met that are just being fed to me? It's just.
It's easily done. Tom's like, oh, Kathy, you're watching other people's puppies and dogs again. Like, what?
That's exactly what it is.
What are you doing?
I mean, don't get me wrong, some of them are fantastic.
But
everything in moderation, right?
For sure. And I'm trying to keep Alfie away from having a phone for as long as possible. And also, I think they're extremely dangerous. I did a documentary a few years ago, and it touched upon body image. And I met these two incredible young girls, very intelligent, both studying incredible things at university. And they'd been sectioned because they didn't have a thigh gap. And at the time, that was trending on Instagram. And
why were they sectioned over that?
They were, because their eating disorders became so bad, and thank God, and I hope they're still recovered, you know, thank God by the time I'd met them, they were well again. But it became a real obsession for many
It's a culture of comparison, isn't it? Yeah, we're always
And I think it's, and then you turn it on its head and you go, well, I've never had a thigh gap, but I'm strong. I've got big, strong legs. And then you get the other side of things where people get obsessed with posting the gym selfies and how much they can lift. And everything just seems so extreme on social media. There's no middle ground. And I think that makes me feel a bit uneasy.
Yeah, good to log off sometimes. Very good to log off.
Yeah, absolutely.
She says, talking to you on the internet.
Different, fine.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
So we talked about the people that have been prevalent in your life. What about the places? the world is a classroom. Where have been your most important classrooms, do you think? The places that have taught you so much?
Oh, gosh, these are such good questions. I would say home. And when I say home, I think of my mum and dad's house growing up, because it was so full of love. And I'm aware that I'm incredibly privileged and lucky to be able to say that, because not everybody grows up in a loving environment, and my parents were just incredible. So yeah, I guess it's coming back to my parents and then the place that they created, and they made everything magical. And like I say, we didn't have a lot of money, but my dad created a beautiful garden with them. I remember like animal paving stones, like a little route for me and my sister to go and help pick vegetables and do the gardening, and just really got us involved with everything. So yeah, home for sure. And I would also say I went on holiday, God, before I met Tom. So maybe 10 years ago, I took a trip to St. Vincent's with one of my best friends, Ashley, who actually I should have mentioned in the people section because she's incredible. And I had just come out of a very bad relationship, and I felt like I was on a real journey to finding myself, if you will. And it was where I first started to meditate. And Ashley was a big part of that. And that's what she does now. She specializes in meditation and healing. And so all that came from her. And St. Vincent's was a real special place. And I remember sitting on the beach that first day, and Ashley was like, "Do you know what? Just do 5 minutes breathing." And I found it really difficult to switch off, as I always do. And then night by night, day by day, whenever I decided to meditate, it just got that little bit easier. And by the end of the holiday, I'd fallen in love with it. And to start that in such a magical place, I mean, that's some really cool spiritual people there, actually. That started a whole new journey for me into learning how to switch off and to visualize properly. And gosh, yeah, that was 10 years ago, and it's a massive part of my life now. So it's really stayed with you.
Life-changing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always look back on that holiday as a very special time, and Ashley is still one of my very dearest friends, and I go to her for all sorts. I do believe there are certain people on this earth that are earth angels and that have this ability to heal, you know, in ways like Reiki and meditation. Mm-hmm. And Ashley's one of those people. So yeah, it was quite a turning point.
What about the place where you met Tom?
Well, that was the gym. That old cliche. And strangely enough, the gym features heavily still in my life. So he used to work at a very posh gym called Hale Country Club. It's beautiful.
Oh, that is posh.
It's very posh.
That's right, fancy.
Yeah, it is. So before children, before responsibilities, I used to go there to train and chill out. And I saw Tom all the time, and everyone just referred to him as Happy Smiley Tom. That's what everybody knows Tom as. And I didn't think anything of it. I wasn't his type. He wasn't necessarily mine. And then I remember just putting on Facebook a general status saying, does anybody want to see the film Mandela? I really want to go. And he messaged me and he was like, I'd take you. And I was like, oh, that's Smiley Tom from the gym. Weird. And I thought, oh, well, let's do it. He seems nice enough.
And he was working at this gym, yeah?
He was working at the gym, yeah. And I was training with his then roommate at the time. And he took me to the cinema, and then he took me for a lovely meal. And I remember going back home and thinking, gosh, I don't know whether that was a date or not, but it was one of the best nights I've had. He just made me laugh. So laughter's a big thing for me, and he made me cry laughing. And he was a gentleman. I always remember, I'm quite old-fashioned like that. Like, I hold my own. I'm an independent woman, but my granddad always said to me, it's a really good sign if they hold the door open for you or they pull out the dining chair. It's nice. It's a nice gesture. And Tom had all that going on. And I thought, wow, you've been raised really well, and you know your manners. And that really appealed to me. And
And I kind of like the way he slid in there, because he didn't just come and ask you out cold. He was like, hang on a minute, she wants a bit of company. Let's not, you know, let's turn this up a bit. And you didn't see it coming. You didn't know that he liked you.
No. And, you know, I think like second or third day, I said, you know, who's your ideal woman? Who's your free pass sort of thing? And he said, Jessica Alba. And I was like, yeah, I get it. She's gorgeous. And he went, what about you? And I said, Idris Elba. And it told just sat back and he's like, right, okay. Well, we're not remotely. And I was really blonde at the time. He's like, yeah, I like brunettes. Not really into boobs. Bit of a leg man. And I'm like, oh, great. I've got legs like a prop forward and massive boobs. This is going nowhere. But yeah, it, you know what? After a few weeks, I was like, oh God, I'm in. I'm so into you. You are more attractive than anybody I've ever met. And it was just, you know, that old saying of when you know, I never believed that. I'd had such a bad time of it with guys that I'd given up. I'd given up when Tom came along.
How old were you when you met Tom?
30. Yeah, it would have been. Yeah, just turned 30. When we got together. So yeah, he broke the mold. All of a sudden I was like, wow, this is what it's like to date a nice guy. Why have I not done this before?
So the gym, gym paid off in more than one way. Yeah,
the gym paid off. Yeah, and we both still love the gym, so
kind of occupational hazard for him, really, isn't it? We touched on the working men's clubs, but in terms of stages that you performed on, were they as important as arguably the ones that you trained on at drama school, do you think?
Oh yeah, oh for sure. And you learn so much from every performance, be it on stage or television. And I've worked with the most incredible actors over the years, like been so fortunate and learnt a lot of my craft from them as well. I worked with an amazing actor on a project called Lilies, which is still right up here in terms of the jobs that I've done. I adored that job. And again, incredible cast. And the guy playing my dad, Brian McCarty, I remember watching him on the monitor and I was like, holy smokes, I'm watching a masterclass here. And you know, Stephanie Cole, I did Corrie with her and I did Scarborough with her. And I was like, wow, just watching you in action. And then, of course, live performances, standing in the wings and watching somebody like Beverly Knight, for example, you do just go, this is another level. And you learn from them and you absorb. And every job is a learning curve and you never stop learning ever as an actor. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the people and the places that I've performed in.
What about some of the sets that were already familiar to you? Emmerdale and then Weatherfield, you know, two of the most famous sets that have been piped into our living rooms for as long as we've been alive. What were they like as classrooms?
For sure. I was going to mention The Rover's Return, actually. My first scene was in there with the lovely Ken, the lovely Bill. And oh my God, I was so nervous on my first day because, you know, where I'm from, it's a real institution and it was a lot of pressure. But again, surrounded by all these faces that I've been watching for years and being in this iconic pub to then becoming a barmaid in there, I'm forever grateful for that. And, you know, incredible actors walking through those doors.
Yeah.
Terry McKellen has done Corrie. Like, it's just crazy. again, I always think I've got so much respect for soap actors because I did a job recently and I won't say what job it was, but the director pulled me to one side and he said, your stamina is off the scale. And he said, it's because you've done soap. You're used to that schedule, that crazy schedule, and being able to pull it out of the bag at the drop of a hat, you know, when something changes. And so again, I feel grateful for a whole new skill set when you work on a soap, really. It really is. I had an incredible time at Corrie. So yeah, the Rovers will always have a special place in my heart. It's magic. It is magic.
Yeah, and like you say, where you were raised and born. I mean, Corrie's it, right? It's like going to be signed as a player for Manchester United or City.
Oh, my dad. I've never seen my dad cry before, and I could see him filling up when I told him I'd got the Corrie gig. They were just utterly beside themselves, as was my, you know, grandparents, who have watched it since day one, like a lot of people. And so that was a real, because there were times when, in between the working men's clubs, like, you know, if I didn't get a job, my parents' understanding of the industry was so funny. I remember going to, I can't remember, I think it was a musical, and it was for Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I'd already been down on the Monday, and my agent called Monday night. And she said, "I'm so sorry, Catherine, but they really like you. Could you come back tomorrow?" And I said, yeah, sure. So I went back. And then I think it must have been the Thursday that they phoned again. "So sorry. Can you come back? Can you try this other song?" And I'm like, yeah. And I told my dad, and he was like, no, Kath, if Mr. Lloyd Webber wants you, he can get on a train and he can come to you this time. That's not fair. And I was like, "Graham, I don't think it works like that, mate. I can't see Lloyd Webber just bobbing on a train to come and see me."
That's so brilliant.
Funny, bless them. So yeah, Corrie, that day they were just thrilled.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love it.
I know. Bless them.
We've talked about the people, we've talked about the places. Now, can I take you to my final question and talk about the situations and the life lessons that taught you so much?
Holding my babies for the first time.
Oh.
Giving birth changes you in so many ways. Mm-hmm. With both babies, again, it was really spiritual for me. Incredibly traumatic, but spiritual. And I was really into my hypnobirthing. I meditated through as much of it as I possibly could. And
did it help?
Yeah, for sure. Throughout the pregnancy, that hypnobirthing helped. But it really came into its own in the delivery room. And it was almost, although I was in a lot of pain, it was quite euphoric. And seeing these little people on my chest, just both, mm-hmm. neither baby cried. They both just looked up at me. Both went on my chest, both looked up at me. And then, I remember feeling so overwhelmed. You know, you suddenly have to keep this little thing alive, which is a big responsibility. I'm generally extremely clumsy. I'm like Mr. Bean with boobs. So suddenly having to keep these little things alive. But I just remember thinking in that moment, wow, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. You know, as long as I've got my babies, my family, and we're healthy, that is everything. And that becomes more and more apparent the older I get. You know, when you have friends that get poorly or you lose friends for whatever reason. I just count my blessings every day for being in good health, touch wood, and having my family around me. So they were probably the most life-changing events for sure, giving birth.
What about those early jobs and failed auditions, the cancelled shows, the false starts? As frustrating as they are at the time, they are so informative, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I don't believe anything now till I sign a contract.
you had to learn the hard way.
Oh, for sure. You know, there's a couple of series that are like, "Oh, yeah, it's going again." And then they're like, "Oh, no, it's not, because we want somebody to write this or X, Y, and Z." And so you do learn a lot over time. Our industry can be a little bit all over the place. I've always sacrificed a lot for my career. And there were two big jobs. When Lily's came along, I was in France and they wanted to see me for a recall. And I was on a very long overdue holiday that I'd saved up for ages. And my agent said, they really like your cap. You know, it's up to you whether you want to come back, but I think it could be a goer. And I remember thinking, gosh, well, it's going to cost me more money to fly back. I didn't have much at the time. And I thought, come on, let's do it. Like, I really wanted it. And I flew back for that. And then weirdly, I was about to fly to Washington when I got a call from Coronation Street. And it was the same scenario. They really like you. Can you come back tomorrow or the day after or whatever it was? And we were physically getting on the plane, my friend and I. And I went, oh, my God, what do I do? And luckily, my friend, again, very independent, feisty woman, she went, oh, babes, you know, I'm fine. Go. You have to go. And it's big. It's decisions like that where, you know, I do have days of self-doubt. I do have imposter syndrome. But in my, to my truest self, I know I can do it. Deep down inside, I know I can do it. And it's digging deep on those days where you feel really low and you don't have any confidence to go, I can do this, I can do this. The universe is giving me an opportunity here and I've got to see it through. I'm a big believer in that. So moments like that have taught me that sometimes taking a risk and making a small sacrifice can absolutely pay off.
And, big time.
You've got to be dedicated. You've got to be dedicated in this industry. So, yeah, there's been a few situations that have been very similar.
What about the jobs that got away, the ones that woulda, coulda, shoulda?
I went through a period of time where I was up against Joanna Froggatt a lot. And I was up against her for Downton. And it went to the right girl. She's perfect. She's amazing. I'm a big fan. So there were moments. But then I can't remember what job came up around the same time. There was another job, but I can't remember what it was. But I remember thinking, okay, so this is my path. I never dwell on not getting a job because I'm a big believer in, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And I'm a big believer in giving out things to the universe and creating affirmations. And it was my friend actually said to me the other day. So when I was doing Scarborough, a lot of the scenes were shot in a pub called The Good Ship. And I'd forgotten about that. And we didn't get a second series of Scarborough. And, everyone was gutted.
I was surprised at that, Kath, because I thought it was in such an excellent show.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. No, we loved it. And
didn't they rate really well as well?
The ratings were great. The reviews were great. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason.
There really isn't, you know. And it's only when you've got a few of those under your belt that you have the... the wisdom to look at it that way. But the first few really do cut deep, don't they?
Oh yeah. Gosh, they do. But I think it was Shane. Shane phoned me and he said, do you realise the pub that you filmed in for Scarborough was called The Good Ship? And cut to a few years later, I'm doing The Good Ship Murder with Shane. I'm a big believer in, like, the universe just drops little breadcrumbs. There's a few things. And whenever I miss out on a job, although at the time I might be a bit gutted, I try to move on from it quickly.
You have to.
Or always comes in. And in the time where it doesn't, you know, there might be a couple of months or a few months where I go, oh, gosh, it's a bit quiet. I then go, well, do you know what? I'm supposed to be with my kids. The universe is telling me I'm supposed to be with my kids and I'm supposed to write. You know, I write a lot. I've got two shows on the go at the minute, which... fingers crossed, watch this space. And so I always feed off that. I always think, okay, so at the moment, I've got some downtime. I'm going to be the best mum that I can be, and I'm going to write a whip-ass TV series or, you know, whatever it is, or I'm going to learn some new songs, do some accent work. I never stop training myself, if you will. So, yeah, I always think there's a reason.
You've got lovely drive, haven't you? You're very self-motivating.
It's a lot of coffee, though. I suppose I am.
I think that's great.
You know, I have my moments like everyone else.
You've got real ambition for yourself. I love that.
Thank you.
And I don't think we celebrate that enough, especially women. We kind of apologise for it. And I think there's nothing wrong with being ambitious for yourself.
Oh, for sure. The way I think of it is we are on this earth for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. I don't want to be on my deathbed going, oh, shoulda, coulda, woulda. I just am determined to grab life by the goolies and do as much as I can.
Well, yeah, because when you get downtime, there you are doing, like, you know, work on your accents or learning new songs. You don't rest on your laurels. And that's probably why you've never had too long out of work, because you really have literally stepped out of drama school and not looked back.
Oh, I've been so lucky, darling. So lucky. And yeah, I'm really grateful. And I don't want to rest on my laurels. You know, it's not in my nature. I have the odd lazy day like everyone else, but I just love it. I genuinely love it.
We've spoken about how you learn your craft as a singer and as an actor, but what about your stint on the Strictly dance floor? Because everyone that's come on this show, certainly of late, has talked about it almost evangelically. They've loved it. It's been transformative for them. Was that your experience?
Do you know what? You keep prompting people that I should have mentioned in the people section, Janice. Oh, there's so many people in my life. I believe that I was supposed to do Strictly to meet Janice. I couldn't dance at all. I avoided dance lessons like the plague at drama school. I didn't have the confidence. And Johannes changed that. He changed me. He gave me a new confidence. And again, you know, I had hang-ups like everybody else. I was like, oh, no, you can't lift me up, babes. I'm too heavy. And he's like, baby girl, you are beautiful and I will throw you over my head. You know, he lit me up in such a way. And I did things that I'm the girl that's scared of doing a forward roll. And he was throwing me around all over the show. And so it was a real confidence boost for sure. And I loved every second of it, especially the tour. The tour was just joyous. And those dancers, every single one of them, firstly, they're all lovely, just an absolute dream. They work harder than anybody I've ever met. I remember being on tour and Luba's toes were bleeding. And I was like, Luba, babes, like, hey, do you want to... She was like, it's fine, I was done. And I was like, wow. they are athletes.
Machines.
They're another level. Yeah. We all had to share a dressing room on tour. I remember looking at these bodies thinking, God, nothing moves. Like, they all look incredible. I used to slip off into the loo. Like, I'll get changed in here. It's like an episode of Baywatch in there.
Because when you're competing, you all share a dance. You all share a dressing room, don't you? It's all the female dancers and then all the male dancers.
Yeah, on tour, yeah. And, God, I just remember thinking, this is inspiration. I need to do some more squats. This is another level. But they were great. All of them were great and such happy, positive people, without exception, really. So I had an incredible time and I learned a lot. And I loved the fact that, you know, we were gutted to go in week six. We were. But in the same breath, week in, week out, the constructive criticism that we had off the judges, you know, I carry it with me. And if and when I need it, it's there. And I remember everyone gave Shirley a really hard time when Johannes and I left. I can't believe you got rid of Kath and da da da. And I thought, she's the best in the business. She knows what she's doing. If she thought my legs were going all over the place, then they were going all over the place. You know, it's I look up to the judges so much, and I'm really grateful for that.
Are you glad you did it then?
Oh. I wish I could do it again. I really do. And JoJo is forever in my life now. He's not going anywhere, even if he wanted to. I'd hound him. He's just a dream.
There's something about him, isn't there? Because everyone that dances with him just falls deeply in love with him.
He is an earth angel. He is an earth angel. He's special. And he just brings out the best in you. And he's an incredible teacher and he's still got that discipline. But that man has so much love in his heart and he does so much good. He is changing the world and he's done that for many years, from taking dance lessons back to the townships, you know, in which he grew up in, to giving something mm-hmm. back to the children, to helping them to dance, to supporting his family. He is changing the world, and there's not many people that can say that. He is literally an earth angel, in my opinion.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it's nice to leave it there then.
Yeah.
Let's leave you in the ballroom where yeah. you wish you could go back.
Absolutely.
If they asked you back, would you do it again in a heartbeat?
I would bite their hand off. Christmas special. I'm all over it. I'd be there.
Standing on the tour. I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. God, I'd love it. I'd love it.
God, well, listen. Good luck out on the road, because the last tour you did was Strictly, but this one is going to see you performing in a whole new way. Well, certainly a new way for audiences that know you from the screen and the Strictly dance floor. Best of luck with it, Cam.
Oh, thank you so much.
A huge thanks to Catherine, and you can catch her on tour across the UK and Ireland in Bonnie and Clyde the Musical. Tickets are on sale now. And if you fancy more chat with other stars from the small screen, we have episodes with Faye Ripley, Sally Lindsay, Alan Cummings, Mark Bonner, Charlie Brooks, Tamsin Athwaite, Sarah Parish, Lisa Wright. I mean, I could go on. Oh, Beverly Knight's in there as well. So why not go and lose yourself in our back catalogue? I'll be back on Tuesday with a little something from the cellar for you. Until then, thanks so much for listening.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.